And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 871. It's a Monday afternoon, so we're here to recap your week 20 fab. We'll talk trades some other time. We don't need to do that today. Nothing really happened, right? Wasn't that busy. But we'll talk some fab because next week's fab will be pretty chaotic due to the trade deadline that just took place. We'll talk about that probably intermittently throughout the show. But in order to help break down the week in fab, as usual, my co-host, you can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_TBenTid. How are we doing, my friend?
It's been a whirlwind, Bubba. Doing well, though. Lost a closer or two in a couple spots, which is probably always the worst part, I think, of the trade deadline. It's always inevitable, though. So just looking, like you said, looking forward to seeing who I can fab next week. And in a couple spots, I actually didn't spend any money, almost by design, just to wait and see what would happen. So hopefully that was the right move, but we don't know that for a week. But should be a – yeah, and you and Ryan, I think you're going to record tonight. So you guys are going to have all the fun talking about all the trades and trying to figure out what's going to happen now.
Yeah, just completely throwing stuff at a wall and seeing what sticks, essentially. That's what we'll be doing because there'll be a couple of things that make a ton of sense. Like, hey, this is what X, Y, and Z leads to. But for the most part, I think we could all be pretty honest and be like, none of us know right now. But not like the people that know are the front office and the managerial staff trying to figure it all out because a lot of the moves feel like they're platoon situations or are we going six-mans or – Like we already saw Emmett Sheehan got sent to AAA already, which, you know, what would have happened with trades or not, most likely. But, a lot of moving parts is the best way I'll say it right now. All right. With that being said, though, Ben, let's get to it. Let's talk some fab from week 20. So what are we looking at on the financial side of things this week?
All right. So first up, like always, we're going to cover the remaining balances and spending this past week for the OCs and the main events, our 12-teamers and our 15-teamers. So first up is the OC balance. After week 20, on average, each OC team has $228 left. That is way up compared to last year, which was $206 through 20 weeks. This week, we had $21 spent per team on average compared to 30 last year. And then last week was $13. So we're up from last week, but we didn't quite hit the spike that we saw in 2025, which I'm pretty sure is also either before or after the trade deadline. I'm not sure how it exactly lined up, but it seems to coincide with deadline moves or anticipation of moves. And then for the main event, we're at 174 remaining per team on average compared to 166 last year through 20 weeks. In week 20, $25 was spent per team in the main event compared to 17 last week. So we saw a similar $8 jump in the OCs and the mains from last week. But still down from last year. Main event in 2025, week 20 was $32, so down $7 compared to that. And one thing before I move into the ads per league is that I mentioned this a while back in a previous show, but Ryan has the 2025 data all the way out to the end of the year. And for those who may have forgotten, the OCs, for example, at the end of 27 weeks last year, $118 was left per team. And then the main event, that was $81. So I think if we were to subtract those balances from what we have now, that's kind of like the active balance, I would probably assume. Of course, we're not going to know what this year's going to end at yet. But if we just take last year as a reference, and it's been very close as we do this each week, sometimes the weeks end up lining up perfectly in terms of remaining balances for both contests. But right now we're behind pace on spending, which is fine. So I would say that the 228 in the OCs is take away the 120. It's about like 110, but we're $20 behind last year's pace. I'm not sure how you would try to estimate that. But so with all that said, I'm saying like $110 probably for active teams is left in the OCs. And then the main event is 174. Last year, we were stuck with $81 left. So maybe $90 is what's left per active team in the main event, I'd like to think. And I hope so, because my main event teams are closer to $90 than 174. So that would make me feel better if that's the case. And then lastly, the ads per league, the OCs was 17, which is the second week in a row it's increased. It was 16 last week per league. So 17 is getting closer to 1.5 moves per team on average. And then the main event's almost back to 2 moves per team. There were 28 moves this past week made per league. So roughly 2 per team, and that was up from 25. And that's also the second week in a row that it moved back up. I think the All-Star game proved to be an anomalous week with people just taking it off and not trying to do too much with fab. So getting active again, but we're not going to hit the green cells that we were seeing early in the year, I don't think.
No, I think those green cells are long gone is what I would think of on that one, because as you mentioned, people just aren't paying attention as much. People are out of money, so on and so forth. It should just be read the rest of the way. But it was a little spike, as you mentioned, compared to the last few weeks, but also kind of falls in line as well. So really good, good stuff there. Let's talk about the players, though, as we tend to do on this show. And we're just going to go straight down the main event list, obviously referencing the OCs, but the more relevant players as this season goes along, especially for future fab weeks for you in shallower leagues, is talking about main event ads. And also, we talked before the show, me and Ben, and like the majority of the top ads in OCs are also top ad in mains due to playing time and so on and so forth. So let's kick it off here. Max Clark. If you look on Fangraphs, I believe it was Maxwell Clark on Fangraphs, which makes me laugh every time I looked at his name. He was added in 60 main events. Every main event league added Maxwell Clark this week, and he was added in 232 OCs, pretty close to all of them, I believe, is how that one plays out. In the main events, average of $93, max of 217, min of 18. In the OCs, average of 89, max of 395, min of 3. Heck of an opening weekend, Ben. We Ryan and I kind of joked, we got called up on the Fab show that, you know, not a bad place to start out in Sacramento. That works out for you. Well, he had 6 hits in his first 3 games, including a home run. Did not steal a bag, though, but looked really good. And more importantly, I was impressed by the kid's plate discipline up there. I say kid because he's 21 years old. So what were your thoughts on Max Clark heading into this weekend for Fab?
He was definitely my top player. He was definitely someone I wanted to add on all my Fab teams, even if I didn't really need an outfielder that badly. Just he's better than a lot of the guys on the bottom of my roster in terms of outfielders. And I didn't realize he had the Sacramento series when I was doing Fab. But, yeah, it definitely explains the – definitely gave him a little help, I'm sure, with the hot start. And good thing to see, too, is that he's left-handed, Clark, and he started two or three – well, of the 3 games he started so far, 2 were versus lefty, so he's not going to platoon. He had 7th all 3 games, which is fine as long as he's going to play every day. And a major speed profile, it feels like, but as he gets older, he could get more power. I just don't know that's going to happen now. So if you need steals and hopefully a good average, because he's hit like 270, what was it? This year he's hitting 276 in AAA, hit 271 last year, and then in 2024, 279, across a couple levels. So only 418 at bats or plate appearance, above double A. I mean, that's basically a full year. So he's still, like you said, he's 21. So Clark hasn't had a ton of time to get seasoned, but he started playing when he was 18 at least. So he has 3 years of minor league experience, 4 years, I guess. So he's been around for a while, and it's good to see the Tigers finally call him up. So he deserving of being the top ad this week in the main event. And like I said, I wanted him, but I just didn't have the money. I wasn't going to blow my budget on an outfielder when I didn't really need it that badly.
Yeah, not gonna fault you on that one. Like I put bids in on him. Like I got him in like 1 OC for like $43 or something, but it wasn't like a hefty weekend because I was not spending triple digits at this point in time. Like I love the skill set. The month of July was very, very good for Max Clark. The power, I get 4 homers and 4 steals over the month with a decent batting average. So there is a lot to like there with Max Clark and the playing times there, especially with the fire sale that took place in the pitching staff, at least. So they're going to kind of like tank it and let the young kids play for the rest of the season in Detroit. All right, St. Louis Cardinals, as we head to the mound, Quinn Matthews. That's with 1 T, Matthews, by the way, for now until that changes. 58 main event leagues for Quinn Matthews. High of 77, average of 22. He's picked up in 111 OCs. High of 57, average of 14. In Quinn Matthews' debut on Friday, 5 innings, 2 runs, 3 walks, 3 Ks against the Toronto Blue Jays. Control's been his biggest bugaboo throughout the minors, Ben. And I'll be completely honest, I did not have if he was in my bid list, we're down the waterfall for Quinn Matthews.
The one thing that kept him kind of high for me was that he gets the Road Rockies this week. So that was
a plus.
Yeah, so it's at least a good matchup once we're finally able to add Quinn Matthews. But yeah, all you heard about, at least what I heard about, leading up to Sunday was the walk issues that he had this year. Yeah, he had a 509 walk per 9 in AAA this year. Last year, it was 6.73 walk per 9 across a handful of levels. If you want that as a walk percentage, it was 14% this year and then 16.8% last year. So definitely an issue the last couple seasons for Quinn Matthews. And then I think he had 3 walks and 3 strikeouts in his first game. So he didn't. The control didn't increase. And that just kept me a little hesitant. But because of, like I said, because of the road Rockies and the chance that they didn't really trade a lot of players, the Rockies, they still have Goodman, for example. They did trade Doyle, but he wasn't playing anyway. They're kind of the same lineup, and it's not a horrible lineup. It's just on the road, they tend to have the hangover. So I think it would still be a decent stream to take a chance on. I don't know how their walk rate is as a team right now, the Rockies, but this could be ugly for Matthews the rest of the year. And I don't know. I was fooled by Bubba Chandler's walk improvements last year when he got called up. So if Matthews does improve, I would just be wary of him next year, because I think we need a bigger sample than a couple months to see that he's actually figured things out.
Look at that, folks. He can be consistently in the main event race and still learning from our mistakes in fantasy baseball. It's a beautiful thing to see. Yeah, now the control, I've been Mackenzie Gore a lot in my time. And I'll be honest, like, I'm a big Wisenhunt fan. Don't have very many shares of him. I love the skills there. Walks are his problem as well. It's so many of these young pitchers. I talk about it a lot when I write about prospects for AL West stuff. A lot of these guys that are super, super talented, their biggest thing holding them back is command. And that was Kyle Harrison's biggest thing for years until a tweak was made. So we'll see. Quinn Matthews' skills good, command not. Someday maybe it will be. All right, next most added player in the main event, Hayden Wesneski of the Houston Astros, picked up in 57 mains, average of 15, max of 48. He was picked up in 69 OCs, average of 8, max of 26. Hayden Wesneski is one of my top options this week. We'll talk about a move I made in my AC with Hayden Wesneski, but he returned from the IL this past week, Ben, on Wednesday, 5 2/3, 3 runs, 2 walks, 4 Ks against the Angels. He threw 79 pitches, so very efficient 5 2/3 inning from Wesneski. I love the skill set. I know he's coming back from Tommy John surgery. That's always a concern. But Wes, talent-wise, I'm a big, big fan. Gets a beat-up Jays team this week and a very nice two-step next week. So I really wanted to get him for this upcoming at least 2 to 3 weeks for him.
Same, Bubba. He was maybe my top pitcher. I don't know if I had him or Javier higher. It may have been Wesneski or somebody else as well. But I just didn't bid enough. Just wanted to go aggressive. Excuse me. And then you mentioned the coming up from Tommy John, and the command may not be there. But at this point, I think it's kind of worth taking a risk for Wesneski. Seems like a pretty quick turnaround. He must have had the internal brace. If you said that, I apologize. And then you mentioned the two step next week. Just to say who it is, it is the your Giants, and then the
Mariners.
Yeah, the Mariners. So. For teams where I'm looking for two steps, I was looking at Wesneski for sure. And yeah, he had some pretty good skills last year. It's kind of hard to say if they're going to translate after the injury, but he like a 17.6% K minus walk in 2024 with the Cubs. That was 16.3% for Wesneski. So he's definitely has some pretty good underlying skills that we like to look at with our starters. His swinging strike rate wasn't that high, but in his first start back, 12.7%. So that's good to see. He was getting swings and misses. So if you're able to get Wesneski, just be careful with the blow up just because of the control. But he only had 2 walks, like you said, in that first start back, so wasn't terrible. He went 5 innings, almost 6, so he's stretched out enough, it seems like, to compete for wins. And the Astros are a good team again, it seems like. So I think he should have been the top ad probably in most lists this past weekend.
Yep, fully agree. I was a big, big fan of that skill set, and hopefully hopefully he maintains it just good enough for the rest of the way, because like I said, that post Tommy John is, you know, always a concern, but we'll have to see how this one pans out. All right, first of a few closers, or what we thought were closers, will be discussed now. Brandon Garcia of the Arizona Diamondbacks. We know Paul Sewald last week got demoted, and then he has got just destroyed his last couple of outings on the mound, where he's lucky he's not Emmett Sheen in his way out off the roster. But Brandon Garcia, the D-backs, picked up in 55 main events, average of 26, max of 96. He was also picked up in 126 OCs, average of 17, max of 86. Garcia picked up 2 saves this past week for the Arizona Diamondbacks. I wrote about it in one of the news columns that I do for the Patreon. And I know others have mentioned it, though. He's a lefty. He's one of the only lefties in the bullpen. And the second save that Garcia picked up against the first one, his first against Cleveland, second in a row, he faced a switch hitter and back-to-back lefties. And so that makes me wonder if was he the only option in that regard. But he got the 2 saves. You know how this goes, Ben. He's the guy for now. until we get other, you know, they've talked Loisaga, or Johnny Lasagna, as I used to call him.
Loisaga.
That's how I knew it was said. I just couldn't get it through my brain. Johnny Lasagna always goes well. And
I like that one.
Could be a lot of things, but what's your thoughts on Brandon Garcia? Because for now, he's at least an option, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it would have been better for me to add him and drop Wells if I could go back in time, because I held on to Tyler Wells in a very important league. But you mentioned it, just talking about the lefties and the switch hitter and his last save. Garcia is the only lefty in the Diamondbacks bullpen right now, and I just didn't want to I didn't see him as an upgrade to what I had. I also had Eric Miller on a different main event, which is now I have to drop him, presumably, because I think I forget where he got traded to, but Eric Miller's gone. He's not the closer.
We're going to get to him because you weren't the only one that picked him up, Ben. He's about three.
At least I got him the week before, though. But I didn't start him last. I didn't get the two saves, though. It's just frustrating.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Yeah, but different story, though. So with Garcia, he actually has really good skills. His estimators are all below two or just around two. That's his Sierra XFIP. Where is his Sierra? His Sierra is 212. His XFIP, XERA, and FIP are all really good. He has a 65.6% ground ball rate in 30 innings. That seems kind of legit. And if you look at his minor league numbers, Garcia has a history of pretty high ground ball rates. Not this high, but usually 50% or higher. So that's really good. No homers allowed yet, but maybe he's like a heavy sinker baller, presumably based on these numbers. His K minus walk is 25.7%. So he's definitely really good. Garcia, I think he's a solid RP3. I don't think you'd want him as an RP2 because of the leftiness. I think he's more like Hogan Harris, who's also a lefty. Hopefully the usage for Garcia is a little bit more consistent than it has been for Harris this year as a whole, because like I mentioned last week, there's a huge stretch of time, a couple months almost, where Harris didn't get a save. Hopefully Garcia is not like that. But you mentioned Jonathan Loisaga. He never really closed for the Yankees, but he's probably one of their better righties in the pen. And Roster Resource has a four-man committee of Garcia, Ginkle, Loisaga, and Juan Murillo. Closer Monkey has it as they only go three deep. So they have Garcia, Murillo, and Loisaga. I doubt Ginkle is going to get a save chances. So I don't know. We have to wait and see this week. If you did add Garcia, kind of hold him. And I feel like it's more likely that Murillo and Loisaga get a save this week just based on likelihood that there's going to be righties coming up in a certain point in a save situation. But Garcia's a really good pitcher. I just don't know how many saves he's going to get going forward.
Yep. It's very much in flux with the D-backs, but at least unlike some other teams we will discuss, they're winning baseball games. So that's a plus. So there will be options, even if they're shared, which we've hit on throughout the season, is sometimes you just take the shared approach and roll with it. Christian Javier, another Houston Astros starting pitcher getting discussed here. He was picked up in 51 main events, average of 9, max of 29. Christian Javier picked up in 30 OCs, average of 4, max of 12. So kind of slept on a bit in OCs, maybe, rightfully so. Garcia came back at the beginning of July. He's primarily been out of the bullpen, Ben, but did come in as a piggyback to Bran on his last outing. 5 shutout innings, no walks, 7 Ks. It was the Angels, but still, that counts in the world of baseball. And Javier was set up for a two-step this week against the Jays and at San Diego, which is very, very nice. And for now, unless I completely missed something, the Astros didn't make a move for a starting pitcher, surprisingly, which that was on the radar. So Javier, Wesneski and company, they look to be locked in for now.
Seems like it, yeah. And kind of the same analysis for me from Wesneski applies to Javier, except for Javier, he doesn't have the two-step next week, but come back from the injury, and he hasn't really been that good in a long time. If you look at his season numbers, I think he got hurt in 2024, and then he had a down 2023 Javier. So 2022 was his last good year, kind of his breakout when he had 194 Ks and 148 innings. But that's kind of gone away. He's more of like a K per inning guy now, at least in his injured 2024, 2025 seasons. And this year he has 21 Ks to 15 walks in 21 innings. So that's not very I'm not very confident that he'll be good going forward, Javier. But the 7 Ks, no walks versus the Angels is like you said, it is really good to see, but it is the Angels and he should do well versus them. So I think he could be a pretty good bench streamer, Javier. He was just behind Wesneski in my Fab list, I believe, and didn't get him anywhere either, but it's just a flyer at this point in the year. Someone who's had success before, hopefully they can find it again.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. If he can find it, it's the million-dollar question, because you got Blanco and Hunter Brown's looking a little better. And they traded Spencer Arrighetti. That's what it was. I knew they got rid of pitchers. They got rid of Arrighetti. They obviously traded Lance McCullers before, so there are a couple moving parts there, which will be kind of nice when we look at the grand scheme of things with Javier. But I'm worried about the consistency with him. He's been banged up, like you mentioned, so we're kind of on the same page on that one. All right, another we're talking catcher. And this melts my heart that he was added in 41 main events. I'm very, very happy about this. Eduardo Valencia, the Detroit Tigers, picked up in 41 main events, average of 8, max of 53, only 37 OCs, average of 6, max of 19. Makes more sense, obviously, if you think about how many are rostered. But really, really like Valencia. Obviously, Dylan Dirk Dingler is holding down Fort in Detroit, but there is room for both. As Valencia has caught, he has DH'd. He's already got 32 plate appearances in about 10-ish games, hitting .452 with 4 homers. Dude has a lot of power. The hit tool is awesome. At AAA this year, been over 81 games. He hit .262 with 17 home runs. Like, there's no denying that. It's just a matter of playing time, and I mentioned it on the last Fab show. If he could play at least 4 games a week, that's an awesome catcher too right there. And he looks like he might be close to 4 games a week right now.
Yeah, and then last year he hit .311 with 24 homers. So he's got some pretty serious skills. I'm looking at the lineup tracker for the Tigers. So Valencia was called up earlier in July, played 3 out of 7, it looks like, and then he went back to AAA. Now he's only played 3 out of 6. I guess if he's hitting this well, he could be worthy of a catcher too in a 15 teamer. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't really in need of a catcher across my 4 Fab League, so I didn't look his way. But I could see someone trying to take the flyer on him, and at least the Tigers have been DHing Dylan, like you said. And I was looking at Dingler. I think he had like 32 at-bats last year, which is insane for a catcher, let alone anybody. So he's playing full-time, and that's going to allow – and when he needs a day off Dingler, it's going to allow Valencia to get into the lineup. So I guess it depends on how often they want Dingler to DH. So for now, it's a good flyer, I guess, but I would just be conscious of not taking too many zeros, even if it's a catcher position and it's so bad. So maybe you had nobody else available to you, and take the upside and hopefully the really good skills when he does play, which I can understand. Just make sure that he doesn't cool off Valencia, and then you're kind of back to where you started.
Yeah, no, it could be streaky. It's a young bat, that always happens, but I believe in that hit tool. I think it's very, very good. It could, like I said, give him at least 50% of the playing time. We can dance with that one as a catcher, 2 out of 15. You made a good point. Like, and it made sense based on the ad drops for the week. In a 12, he's tough. There's more catcher two options there to actually play a lot. But in a 15, he fits the mold these days. All right, next most added player in main events. And I'm really curious your thoughts here, because I went back and forth on this, because we've seen the very, 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 very bad of Andrew Painter. We saw some really good too. And that was recently. Andrew Painter picked up in 41 main events, average of 8, max of 17. He was picked up in 25 OCs, average of 9, max of 32. Painter was called up this past week, pitched on Saturday, I believe it was. No, Friday. Pitched on Friday for the Baltimore Orioles. 6 innings, 2 earned, 3 walks, 6 Ks. And those struggles were in the first inning. Then I think I typed up he's got 17 of his last 21 batters out. Like, he looked really good down the stretch. And this is a prospect that there's always been a lot of hype behind, Ben, but the consistency at the big league level has been few and far between. So is this the time where we like buy back in at a discount on Andrew Painter, or is it too late in the year, I guess, to take the risk on him figuring it out? Because he's got Washington this week, which kind of deterred me from him. But then it's a two-step next week, which isn't the worst thing in the world. So what were your thoughts on Andrew Painter?
Yeah, I saw that two-step next week, and then in a certain league where I could use some volume, I did have bids in for Painter, but not very expensive. I didn't get him either. Where's Painter? Yeah, he went for – I was actually the runner-up on that for that bid, so I was close, I guess. But, yeah, the six Ks, 3 walks is pretty it gives you some little optimism that he could be serviceable Painter, because if you look at his game logs prior to being sent down, it was like at least 2 or 3 walks every game, and the Ks weren't really there. A lot of 3s and 2s, which you don't want to see. He had a 7 strikeout game in May, and then his next high was 4 2 times. So he's got to get more swing and miss. The six is a good start for that. Not sure how the if he changed anything pitch-wise, but just because starting pitching is so bad, especially in the 15s, I was looking to add him potentially, but not with a lot of confidence. So I think it's worth a gamble. And you said it was the Nationals this week, so I wouldn't really want to play him this week, Painter, but I think if he survives the Nationals game, then I think, especially in a deeper league, you roll him out there the following week for those two starts.
Yeah, because if he gets through the Nationals this week, next week it's at St. Louis, at Minnesota. Minnesota can be tricky, but still overall not bad. But then it's the following week, it's another St. Louis start, and then the following week's at the Angels. Like, overall, it's a pretty solid month coming up for Painter if he can maybe tweak something and figure it out. So, very interesting potential with him. All right, next closer, our potential closer on board here, Stephen Cruz of the Kansas City Royals, was picked up in 40 main events, already was getting rostered the week before. Average of 14, max of 47. Cruz was picked up in 43 OCs. Average of 13, max of 43. He was dropped in 8 OCs, which tells you a lot about the OC format and what teams need these days. Cruz did not get he got a save on, I think it was like Monday, the 26th, or maybe it was even the weekend before. Like, didn't get much last week, but he had 3 shutout outings. He hasn't allowed more than 1 run in an outing since June 23rd. Strikeouts have been there. The ratios are what they are for a closer. Like, he had a rough start to the year is the best way I could say it. He's looked the part of late is what I'd say. And he was my top closing target for available options this week. What were your thoughts on Stephen Cruz?
So what I said about Brennan Garcia kind of applies for Stephen Cruz. I wanted to wait and see what happened with the deadline before I went to try to upgrade with these newer emerging closing options. And so I was talking pretty well, highly about Garcia because the skills are so good. Cruz, not so much. He's got definitely a higher walk rate than Brennan Garcia. And yeah, I was looking at the calendar. He got that save on a Wednesday, the first one, then he got the Sunday save. So that Sunday save, I think, kind of opened people's eyes to adding him last week, potentially. Yeah, on the year, his walk rate's 10%. Not horrible when he's a 20% K rate, so 18% K minus walk for Stephen Cruz. The swing strike on the year is 14.9%, so that's pretty good. He kind of has a closer makeup. He throws 98, so that's going to help. And it's kind of funny, though. The roster resource still has Lang as the sole closer for the Royals right now. If I go to Closer Monkey, they actually have it as Stephen Cruz, and then Lang's like the second in line. So I don't know. It's kind of annoying that there wasn't a save chance last week for us to figure things out, but hopefully this week tells us a little bit more. And I guess it's more likely that Cruz would get saves than Brennan Garcia because he's a righty, and Lang's been so bad. So the Royals aren't really going to be going anywhere. So they don't have a whole lot of incentive to make a switch, but I feel like they'd want to not have a disaster every time it comes to the ninth inning. So I think Cruz is gone in my league, so I probably won't be able to add him this upcoming week to replace the guys I mentioned before. Yeah, he's rostered. So I don't know. He could have a couple of blow-ups because of the walk rate, Cruz, but definitely has closer stuff, it looks like. So I think it's worth a gamble. But as an RP3, though, I don't really want him as an RP2. I feel like it's kind of a crapshoot still.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's a definite RP3. I think there's potential for RP2. When Lang was going well, he was an RP2. It was going. What he got, like 8-9 saves over his run?
And Ursig was a good RP2 at one point too.
Yeah, so like my point, I guess, is there's going to be option. Like he's going to get opportunity, which is all we really care about these days with our closers, because that's like the Brandon Garcia question: is what's the opportunity look like with so many of these guys? We don't know who's got the role. It feels like it's Cruz. Like I was dropping Lang to add Cruz. Like that was where the transaction is taking place. So I think Lang's dust. Lang threw the 6th and the 7th over the weekend in Colorado. That to me reeks like, see you, buddy, you're out of here. But I guess we'll see more on that one. But I like Cruz quite a bit. He is my top closing option for the week. Well, looking forward to getting your thoughts on this one. Spencer Jones picked up in 38 main events, average of 32, max of 101. Picked up in 139 OCs, average of 19, max of 108. I love Spencer Jones. Big fan. Since he got recalled on the 25th or 22nd of July, hitting 250, 3 homers, 2 steals, playing against lefties. I loved this move until about 3 hours ago. With the addition of Elliot Ramos, So we're going to see. I told you we'd intertwine some trade talk here, Ben. This makes me wonder what the future of the Martian and Jones is in the alpha. But first off, what are your thoughts on the addition of Jones? And I guess, are we confident in playing time at this point in time? Obviously, we don't know. It's only been a couple hours, but something's going to get mixed up.
Yeah, right now, the Yanks are playing, and so that means that Elliot Ramos is not in the lineup yet. Jones is playing left field tonight. I think it's Jones in left, Grisham in center, and then Dominguez is in right. Looking at the last few weeks for Jones, he got called back up. Basically week 19. So he got called back up week 18, which I think he played that Sunday with an 0-for-3 that week. Three homers, two steals, 286. Had six strikeouts and 21 at bats, 22 plate appearances. So definitely below a 30% K rate. Not enough sample though to see if things have totally changed. Because if you look at on the year, Jones's K rate is 37.6%, which is just not. You can't do that. It's right in line with his minor league numbers. So if anything, he could probably go up a little bit now that he's facing major league pitching. But it's tough. If I look at roster resource, they say it's Jones in right, Ramos in left, and then Dominguez on the bench. I think there's a good chance there's a move made tomorrow because I feel like they would want Jones and Dominguez to get full-time playing time, whether it's with the Yankees or in AAA. Grisham's going to be the center fielder. Ramos, they need him. They need the right-handed bat. So now with Ramos, they have seven lefties in the lineup and two righties. Jeez. The other righty is Jose Caballero.
I didn't realize it was that bad.
I didn't either until looking at it right now. Because with the Garcia there, Goldschmidt's sitting. Volpe's sitting for Caballero. Rosario's a platoon with McMahon. And then Dominguez was a switch hitter. So now he's on the bench, presumably. So I think, I don't know. He's going to play all the time, Ramos. And I we just have to wait and see how the next couple games look because once he's there, they're going to have to sit someone. And maybe they send down Jones, but I don't think Dominguez is playing that well. So, and Jones is actually older than Dominguez, you know, Dominguez has more playing time in the majors. So maybe they go with Jones so he's playing well, but there's a good chance that he just strikes out too much and gets sent back down. But you didn't really see this coming when he did Fab last night. So have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm hoping Jones sticks. He's been much better than the Martian over the last week or so. And you've talked about Dominguez quite a bit on our shows. And I don't know, a change of scenery might be best for that guy. It seems like the whole Yankees thing has been he was so hyped up, but it's just completely gone the wrong direction. But we'll see. I was surprised he wasn't packaged in something today. But the value's so low, I guess it's tough to pull off. A guy that was packaged today, Britton Doyle. Now the Chicago White Sox was activated from the IL in Colorado on Friday, played Friday and Saturday, got a hit in both games, got the day off on Sunday. Now he heads to Chicago, the south side, to be with the White Sox. Picked up in 32 main events, average of 8, max of 37 for Doyle. Picked up in 16 OCs, average of 7, max of 28, dropped in 1 OC. I guess first off, before we talk, maybe ramifications with the White Sox, but what were your thoughts on Doyle? Like we talked about him in the Discord. Obviously, you and I both kind of had sentiments similar with him, but now he's obviously elsewhere. So, what are your thoughts on a Britton Doyle acquisition this week?
Yeah, just didn't have the full picture when Fab went through last night because now he's on a new team, Doyle, and presumably in a short side platoon, which he kind of was already doing in Colorado. I think he played 2 of 3 on the weekend versus righties. All three righties, he started 2 of 3. Maybe they just wanted to showcase him for a trade. Seems like now, looking back at things. And yeah, you kind of alluded to it there at the end, Bubba. I gave him another chance this year, Doyle, after what happened to his family last year. I know he came on a little strongly in the second half, but even going into last year, I remember looking at his 2024 breakout, and he really only had one good month, Doyle. He had like 10 homers or 9 homers in one of the summer months, and everything else was pretty bad. So I think he just got lucky that one month and did enough in the other months to have a 2030 year. So if he gets playing time, which I guess the path is that Benintendi and or Peters just go cold, which I guess is possible, and then Doyle can maybe get full-time at-bats versus righties. But for now, whoever added Doyle, I think you're probably going to have to drop him this upcoming Sunday. And that could change, but there's not a lot of time left in the season. I just don't know how good he is now that he doesn't have Cora to prop up his stats.
Yep, yeah, he seems like a definite drop coming up for many people this week, unfortunately. All right, here's a 15-team name for a lot of the listeners out there because they're probably like, what? But Andrew Monasterio was definitely on my middle infield, towards the top of my middle infield waterfalls this week. And it's because he's playing every day as a shortstop for the Red Sox, who are, if you've been sleeping under a rock, one of the hottest teams in all of baseball. Monasterio, second base, shortstop eligible, picked up in 30 main events this past week, average of 4, max of 13. He was dropped in 2 mains. He was picked up in 7 OCs, average of 3, max of 11, and dropped in 2 OCs. So a lot of mixed thoughts, I guess, on Monasterio. But since July 1st, Monasterio's hitting .333, 3 homers, stolen base. And like I mentioned, playing every single day in Boston, which in a 15-team league with that viability goes a long, long ways.
It does. I just wasn't in the market for a middle infielder, so I did not look at Monasterio this past weekend. And yeah, formerly of the Brewers, and I forget who they had as their other shortstop. I forget his name, but it was an Asian name. It looks like he's gone now. Looking at his, Monasterio Estevan, doesn't really run a lot. Well, his sprint speed is only 41st percentile. His middling sliders, barrel rate's above average slightly, 99.1%. So that's fine. I could play in Fenway. He does have 6 homers. And so he's probably pacing for like an 18 homer pace, Monasterio, which I guess could work if you need power for a middle infielder. Doesn't really have a big history of stealing, which I would want as a shortstop, probably more often than not. So I think they have a decent matchup, though, this week. Am I on the right week? Yeah, the Red Sox, they have the White Sox, and then they're facing the Athletics. So at least for this week, it should be a good stream for Monasterio if he continues to play every day. I just don't know how good he is, but playing time's key, especially in the main event. So I get it. I just wasn't looking for a shortstop this past week.
Yeah, I remember he was a streaming option at times even last year with Milwaukee because he played a lot of third base and he had middle CI eligibility. He's on 15s. He'd get some love there. He was one of the 3 third basemen traded in the Kyle Harrison deal. It was Durbin, Monasterio, and another third baseman. I can't remember now, but yeah, he's nothing special, but yeah, it could be pretty good as well.
I think it was a popular DC pick for James Anderson, yeah. Maybe. I remember hearing Monasterio's name in the wintertime. I knew he was before that, but something like
that. Flexibility, it makes a ton of sense for sure. A couple more here. We could go kind of rapid fire if we have to, but I just want to mention the next guy. We don't have to go deeper on him now because it's pretty much not a factor anymore. Is Eric Miller. He was picked up in 24 main events. He's obviously just got traded to Boston, and that won't have an effect on thing. Daniel Susak. So you could drop Eric Miller, by the way. Daniel Susak of the Giants picked up in 24 main events. Ben, he hit a couple home runs this past week, first of his career. I still wasn't too excited about him. He's still basically platooning with Kavanaugh. Not sure. You said you weren't in the market for catchers anyways, right?
Or the mood, no. But yeah, it's kind of funny.
Mood for catchers.
I shouldn't have said that, but I don't want to offend you, Bubba. The right catcher, I'll be in the mood for them. But yeah, it's kind of weird. Susak, he's a righty, but he's kind of like the starter over Kavanaugh. But I guess he's in the majority of playing time. So like you said with, I think it was Valenzuela was his name, the other catcher.
Valencia.
Yeah, I'm never going to get that right. Valencia on the Tigers. In a 15-teamer, I guess sometimes quality over quantity when it comes to catchers. Catcher two, at least.
Catcher two, for sure. Javi Baez, he's back in our life, folks, whether you like it or not. He's third base shortstop, outfit eligible. He's picked up in 22 main events, average of 3, max of 14, picked up in 10 OCs, average of 4, max of 7. I just bring him up because he's back playing every day. He played 2 games in Oakland. He played 2 games in Baltimore since he got called up. So he played 4 straight games. He got Sunday off, but he played in center field, second base, and shortstop over those 4 games. And he picked up 8 hits over the stretch. Looked pretty good yet again. And so for me in the 15s, Ben, it's the flexibility, like MICI and outfield. Like he could literally fill in your entire roster outside of catcher in a given week or a majority. You know what I'm trying to say? Like MICI, Utah, you could do a lot for your team on week to week basis. So what was your thoughts on Baez? Cause he was another guy. I had him above Monasterio on some of my waterfalls.
I was aware of Baez. I just didn't really make a move to try to add him. I didn't have that big of a need. And I know you had rostered Baez earlier in the year when he got off a really good start. He's in 289 on the year. And well, this past week's 421 definitely helps, but such a small sample. He only has 97 at bats on the year, barely 100 plate appearances. And he had a good bounce back last year. He had 257. I think he was actually an all-star last year too, Baez, which is kind of a joke. 12 homers, 5 steals, and 417 at-bats. So he paced out to be like a useful streamer in 15s. But I just don't know how lucky he got with these recent hot stretches. And like looking at his Savant, he doesn't qualify because of being hurt for so long. But his XBA is kind of high, 274. Just the power is gone. 2.6% barrel rate in those 101 plate appearances for Baez. The sprint speed's below average now. The only other good sliders besides the XBA are his launch angle sweet spot and the K rate. But if the launch angle sweet spot is good and there's no oomph behind it, why is it, what's it matter? So I guess if you needed a, if you just wanted someone bench flexibility, Baez makes sense. You mentioned all the eligibilities that he has, but I just don't know how good he is anymore. And there's no guarantee he's going to play all the time because Roster Resource has him on the bench right now. They have a lot of options. Them being the Tigers, Cole Keith is an option. They did face three righties in the last four games. Tigers, Baez sat versus, or started versus a righty in that time and sat versus a lefty, but he did get two lefty starts. So I think there's a chance he just fills in every once in a while, or he's like a utility guy in the lineup all the time. But I don't know if the skills are good enough to warrant messing around and waiting to see.
That's fair. Baez has burned many of us. Just a heads up for those out there, Connor Griffin was a popular ad in main events, picked up in 22 mains or 21 mains, max of 21. So keep that in mind. He's still not due back to, I think, the beginning of September, but you can start stashing season is upon us with Connor Griffin. Nathaniel Lowe was picked up in 20 leagues, probably with the three A's games in Great American, but Nathaniel Lowe just got traded. So this one to the Guardians. And I'm not sure how that playing time will shake out. I do want to ask you about Dane Meyers, Ben. Dane Meyers, the Cincinnati Reds, because in 15s, he was in some outfield waterfalls. He's become the everyday center fielder in Cincinnati, which obviously will hold legs. He gets three games against the A's pitching staff in Great American before they leave town. Dane Meyers has picked up in 20 main events, average of 6, max of 21. It was 4 OCs, average of 4, max of 7. But Meyers, he's hitting 326 in the month of July, or since July 1st. He got called up July 17th. So, like, the last 3 weeks. He's hitting 326 with 2 stolen bases. Any interest in a guy like Dane Meyers?
Nope. Didn't really see him. Didn't really see the uptick in playing time. And then really looking at his career, just had one partial year of 18 steals. Isn't hit for power. And even if you look at his season log this year, at the week by week breakdown, just not a lot of playing time. And I'm trying to think of who, so he's playing probably over, well, definitely over
TJ Friedl.
Yeah. Who got called back up and started for a little bit. Then I guess he got set. Well, actually, I think the Spencer Steer kind of helps with this as well, because even though McLean may have been the direct replacement for Steer, but yeah, Meyers isn't that good. So it's probably just, you're not going to get these stats that he just put together this past week. So I think he could be very well dropped in a lot of spots next week.
Sounds like a plan. Well, Ben, we've hit that part of the show where we're kind of going over deep, deep stuff that maybe we'll talk about in future weeks. So if you're ready, we can talk about our ad drops of the week before we talk about some 3-week scheduled pitching matchups.
All right, let me go. First up, as usual, is the Listener League. Actually, I got the aforementioned Matt McLean dropping Spencer Steer 3-2. Go figure.
There you go.
That was the only move there. Not a lot of spending this week, but I think it was actually below $10 in all four leagues, so you'd be happy.
You're sticking to your plan. You're going to have that hammer before you know it.
I finally got it in all four leagues. It took me like a month, I think, since I started saying that. New Jersey, Maine, I got your boy Carson Wisenhunt, dropped Andrew Alvarez 4-1. Of course, Alvarez is starting today, but I don't know how long he'll be starting. I got Jesus Sanchez, dropped Colton Cowser. Sanchez is back from the IL, 3-0. So that was only $7 there. Next up is Maine number 3. Here I got Gabriel Hughes, the infamous Gabriel Hughes, dropping Griffin Canning 3-0. And I also got Jacob Lopez dropping Ryan Johnson 3-0. So, I'm actually playing Lopez this week. He's in Cincinnati, and then they both have 2 start weeks next week, which I definitely need in this. Even though Lopez has 2 in Sacramento, I'm not sure if I'm going to start him yet, but Hughes has 2 on the road, so that's mainly why I wanted Hughes. And then I actually got shut out in the hybrid main. I had two separate bids, one player each. One was Max Clark. The other, I think, was Neske. And I just didn't bid enough, so, which I'm fine with. I lost Tyler Wells in this league, and hopefully I can use that money I saved to replace him as my RP3.
Nice. Okay, real quick, Nathaniel Lowe might get playing time because Kyle Manzardo is getting optioned to AAA.
Oh, wow.
That one I did not see coming. But all right, good times. This is why I wanted to wait a little bit for Fallout, like I told you before the show, Ben. A lot of things change as time goes on. All right, for me, my FAB results, I was more active than I thought. I spent a lot of time on FAB this week. My Vegas 12 team, the Vegas Listener League 12 team league, I picked up Griffin Conine, finally got rid of Cam Smith, 9-9 though, so that was kind of nice. Picked up Slick Willie Castro, dropped Lane Thomas, 7-4. I just think Lane's a short-sighted platoon for now, but maybe that'll change. We'll see on that one as the Braves have come out and said that Jarvis will stay at shortstop. Dubon will play pretty much every day as a super utility, so maybe they will open time for Thomas in the outfield. You're going to hear a name mentioned a lot. You mentioned him already, Ben. Gabriel Hughes was picked up, dropped Tyler Wells, 7-0. That was before Tyler Wells got traded, so it feels real good now. But I actually have to play him. I'm not in this league, but one of my leagues I picked up Hughes. I had to play him this week because of a lot of trades that took place, and I don't have rosterable pitchers now. But he's pitching at home against Tampa, but I love that two-step next week that you talked about. Big fan of that. Then I also picked up Patrick Sandoval. He's got a two-step this week for now. Dropped Cody Bellinger, 7-0. So that's where it gets dicey because I dropped Bellinger, and it's a 12-team league for one. Probably won't be back till at least middle of September, maybe earlier. But I also have I have three other guys on the IL. Like I had to get roster flexibility with belly bombs. So he's on the 12-team roster, so you're welcome, those listeners in Vegas. All right, my Vegas AC picked up Hayden Wesneski, dropped Ronel Blanco 23-13, and picked up Blanco last week. Never even pitched him, so that's $33 and done. But, you know, you make mistakes, you live by it. I'd rather have Wesneski than Blanco long-term, and we'll see how that one plays out. In this league, I picked up Gabriel Hughes, dropped Eric Lauer 13-3. Lauer has been great for me, Ben, but his time might be limited. He's scheduled to pitch Wednesday for the Dodgers, surprisingly enough. But I'll take Gabriel Hughes for those future matchups. And then a couple other players picked up John Rave of the Kansas City Royals. We didn't discuss him on the FAB, but well, first farther down my waterfall. But I needed an outfield depth piece, and Rave has been playing four straight games in the outfield, either in center field or right field. I figured with the Lane Thomas leaving town might give some more flexibility for Rave. He's hit safely in all four games since he got recalled to join the Royals with a home run and a stolen base. I'll ride the hot streak while I can and see where it goes. Picked him up, dropped Vinny P, 7-1. There's been no news on Vinny P, and he wasn't really doing it before that. And I picked up Javi Baez and that flexibility, dropped David Hamilton. And his flexibility difference is Baez plays, Hamilton doesn't. That was 7-0. So I probably overpaid, but things I wanted for that squad to continue to hopefully climb. All right, my OLAC picked up Steven Cruz, dropped Alex Lang 46-15. Apparently, I was way too excited for him there. Hey, picked up Gabriel Hughes, dropped Eric Lauer 12-0. Picked up Luis Franquifa, dropped Joey Ortiz 4-1. Picked up Andrew Monasterio, dropped Casey Schmidt 3-1. Joey Ortiz isn't playing anymore either, so keep that one on your guys' radar. Bubba in the Bloom Listener League picked up Steven Cruz, dropped Alex Lang 34-7. Picked up Luis Franquifa, dropped Joey Ortiz 7-1. I did pick up Dane Myers here. He was not at the top of my waterfall. I had Spencer Jones and others, but didn't have him enough. 7-0. And I picked up Hayden Wesneski, dropped Andrew Kittredge 4-0. That Kittredge drop might sting when things are all said and done. And then in the Beat Bubba OC, I picked up Cooper Pratt, dropped CES 6-0. CES is in a platoon, and that's not going to work. But Pratt was available in a lot of 12s, Ben, thought of you when I was going through my rosters there. So I was very aggressive. I was trying to get him everywhere I could. And then the law dog, Lawrence Butler, picked him up, dropped Josh Naylor 4-0. People might think that's a little bit crazy, and I'll explain in a second for you. But two things in that league. I'm in second place in that league. And first off, law dog, we'll talk about him. He's actually starting to play every day, which is great to see. And he's actually producing, which is also great to see. If you just like go back over the last 3 weeks for Lawrence Butler since July 20th, he's hitting .333 with a home run. He's not stealing bases right now, but neither was I need a power, and Naylor has no power right now. He's hitting for average and stealing bags. I am running away with steals in that league, so Naylor's doing – I've been sitting him every week. He's doing me no good at this point in time, so I picked up the law dog to kind of offset that and try to take advantage of three games in Cincinnati and see where it goes.
All right, Bubba, Ben. You are the only person to drop Naylor in the OCs. So because of rounding, he's 100% rostered right now.
So there you go. You guys are welcome. Like, literally – he's hitting for average, it's fine, and he's stealing a ton of bags. I'm not going to deny that, but he's not doing what my team needs. And that for that reason, he's gone. I have plenty of first base help. Like I'm starting Eldridge and others in that format. All right, let's talk about it. Let's look at rest of season schedules for those that might be new to this segment. We did it last year. We did it last week. Ben puts together a sheet, and I'll let him talk about it from there before I butcher the entire setup of the sheet.
Now you probably do it right, though. But, yeah, so what we look at is the – we have a team look at and then a player look up. We typically go over the players, but what we have is I have in an Excel file the rest of season schedule, and then I look at the offenses for the last 30 days. I basically look at WRC plus versus all handedness and then also versus righties versus lefties. I have it in here. And then I also import the RotoWire projected starters. We're looking at the next 3 weeks, including the week we're discussing right now, the week of 8-3. And I do a couple lookups, and we have a couple of lists, one for left-handed pitchers, one for right-handed pitchers, and it's sorted by best matchups based on average opponent WRC plus versus that handedness. So we have a list of lefties, and then we look at who they're projected to face and how those opponents are hitting versus lefties over the last 3 weeks, for example, last month, for example. And then the righties, the same thing. How are their opponents hitting versus right-handed pitching over the last month? And then we just kind of go from there.
Yep. It's a really cool formula. Like on, if you're on the Bubba Boom Patreon, Ryan's got a similar thing on the weekly planner that we talk about, but this is something we dive into. Ben's got his recipe that he uses, and it's been very helpful for me to kind of bounce off of everything. And I laugh because you updated this and sent it to me, and I was busy today, so I hadn't even opened it until right before the show. And yes, I texted you and Ryan last night that I'm like, oh no, that the top player on Ryan's weekly planner on the pitching is Ryan Weathers. So what happens when I go to Ben's sheet here? The top left-handed pitcher, not named Shane McClanahan because he's on the IL, is Ryan Weathers, who has four starts coming up, and they're phenomenal matchups. Like Seattle's tricky, but he's got St. Louis and then two Toronto starts. Toronto's WRC plus versus lefties is 57 over the last stretch, which is really, really bad. And they made some trades, which might not, which might make things even worse. If you guys want actual order of operation here, Weathers gets St. Louis this week on Tuesday, and then next week a two-step Seattle and Toronto, and then it's Toronto after that. So really nice matchups for Ryan Weathers, who's been very hit and miss this year, but a little more hit of late, Ben. So what's your thoughts on Ryan Weathers here near the top of the list?
Yeah, I think it's the way the pitching's going. He's been really inconsistent, Weathers, but his skills last 3 weeks have been really good. Almost a 14% swing strike rate, Sierra xFIP or mid to low threes. His XERA, to your point, him getting hard, is 4.21. That's driven by a 40% hard hit rate in those last 3 weeks. The K minus walk isn't the best. It's only 13.7%, but I think that's because his K rate isn't really as high as it should be based on swing strike rate. It's been 21.9. So I think, especially considering how the swing strike rate's been really good for Weathers still, and he can have a really good start, but then I remember maybe he was on the list last week as well too. He either like will allow have an ERA under 2 or an ERA over 9 last handful of starts. So it's almost like Russian roulette with Weathers. So I think just because of how good the matchups are and where we are in the year, you probably roll with them. Just know that there is some low risk.
Yeah, no, that's kind of what I've been doing each week. I cross my fingers and go, okay, if you're going to get hit hard, at least get strikeouts. Like do one of the two. That's what I'm just praying for with him. But so far, so good. Eventually, it's going to come crashing down, and I can already hear Waxman as the devil on my shoulder, obviously, that he cut him weeks ago and claims he's a horrible guy to roster. But I don't know, these 15-team streets are tricky, and I'll take my chances there. The next guy, this is close to your heart, Ben, because we've talked about him a lot as well, is Ranger Suarez. And this is a tricky one because I think skills-wise, we like Ranger Suarez quite a bit. Since he returned from the IL on July 26th, Ranger Suarez has made two starts. He's thrown four innings of shutout ball with six Ks against the Jays. And then at the Dodgers, 4 2/3, three earned, two walks, two Ks. It's the innings and it's the pitch counts. He's only got to 65 pitches in both starts, which is kind of weird to me, Ben, when a guy's had a hamstring injury, but they're limiting him. But he's got good starts coming up. He's got the White Sox. Then next week it's at Toronto. We already said really bad against lefties. At Pittsburgh. And then he gets, of course, the Giants, which, you know, we'll just that number might get even better as things go along in the coming weeks. So a really good set of matchups. I guess what it comes down to is, are they actually going to let him pitch?
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to actually sit Ranger in one of my main events where I have him because I was going to go with a three-reliever week, and then that reliever was Tyler Wells, and I end up playing Suarez in both spots where I have him, but just hoping that, to your point, he kind of gets over that pitch limit that they're imposing on him. And since he's returned from the IL, Suarez has good estimators. The swing strike rate's only 8.5%. He's never really had a high one. I think a lot of this year he's been kind of closer to 11%. So that definitely hasn't gotten the swing and miss back. His hard hit against in those two starts is also pretty bad too for Ranger. So the BABIP's kind of high as a result, 348. But he can easily turn it around in a single start. And I didn't follow along with you and pull up the starts, but let me pull it again so I can. I think he said he's also a four-star pitcher, right?
Yeah, he's got two-step next week.
Yeah, so at Toronto, at Pitt, Pittsburgh's actually the toughest matchup. So I'm surprised the White Sox were so bad versus lefties this week when I was looking at lineups. So I'm rolling him out there. Definitely roll him next week, and then I can't imagine me wanting to sit him versus the Giants. So I think Suarez, especially in 15, those deeper leagues, he's definitely a start next few weeks.
Yep, full agree. I think you roll out and see what happens. Actually, I wasn't planning on pitching him this week, but when the Brewers went full crazy and I knew Robert Gasser was out, I had to throw Suarez in, I think, in two of my leagues that I had Gasser in. Didn't have a choice on those ones. Could be worse options, so we'll see what happens on that one. Okay, this is where I love doing this little deal with you, Ben, because if you just see certain names, you immediately move on, and most of the time, rightfully so. Like, one golden rule is never Rockies pitcher. Totally fine. Then how many Gabriel Hughes pickups did we make, Ben? Like, we're trying to reinvent the wheel over here. Here's another one where it gets dirty in 15s, but how many times have you seen this stream pay off throughout the time? And the reason I'm going to say it, we're talking Kyle Freeland, folks. He has got quite the matchup coming up. He gets at St. Louis this week, at the Giants next week, and then at home versus the Dodgers. I think, and obviously it's too late to pick him up this week. He is through a complete game shutout on Sunday in Coors, by the way. So that is something positive. But that Giants start next week against that lineup is very, very tasty. And I will point out, I'm not starting them in Coors ever against the Dodgers, but they have an 86 WRC+. We joked about it. I tweeted about it. We joked about it off air. The Dodgers didn't need to keep trading for pitching. They need to trade for hitting. Like, their offense needs help too. And this is an example of, like, if this was in LA, I still probably wouldn't do it, but I'd be more enticed. But my point is, great matchup against the Giants next week, and Freeland is on the radar.
Oh, wow, Bubba, but I think you're going to love this. It's kind of related. I'm actually starting Feltner in a couple of DCs this week on the road.
He's back, baby. He's back. Yep.
it took me 20 weeks, but we're here.
Love it. Like, he got the win on Saturday at home, too. Like, he pitched pretty well against Kansas City.
Yeah, he's been doing pretty well, Feltner. But this is about Freeland. I did pull up the underlying numbers. 12.3% swing strike rate last 3 weeks for Feltner, or Freeland's two similar names, too. He's been unlucky with the left on base, 69.1% left on base last 3 weeks, but his BABIP's also been .242. I'm sure the last start in Coors, the complete game, helped the BABIP get low. His xERA is 3.8, Freeland, so not horrible. And if you're desperate for volume and you don't want to start a reliever and you have no other options for next week, I think you could consider streaming him. I don't know if I'm going to do it, because it's tough to do that in a main event, but in other leagues, maybe like an OC or something, you probably want more volume, but he's pitching well, Freeland, and it wouldn't be the craziest thing I've seen.
Yeah, he'll be in my waterfalls. I'm not going to, like, in my 15s, he will 100% be in my waterfalls. In a 12, probably not a thing, but a guy to at least acknowledge, and probably a guy we'll talk about in the coming weeks, because I think he'll probably stick on this list. We're going to skip past some of the common sense ones, like Parker Messick. You're going to start him no matter what. Foster the Griffin, we got to see. He's in Cleveland now to see how that pans out. Probably going to start him. They had a rocky one his last start. Jake Bennett, you're starting. I want to get to David Peterson, Ben. Cubs made a lot of moves, so we got to see how this pans out. But he's scheduled to face the Royals this week on the road. That's a great start. You want that. They have a WRC plus close to 100, but I'll take my chances in that matchup. He gets the Cardinals the following week, which is a great set of matchups as well. Then it depends if he's still in the rotation, because Edward Cabrera is supposed to be back. There's a lot of things going on there. Like I mentioned, they traded for Clay Holmes. They traded for Kevin Gausman. So times can be limited with David Peterson. But while we have him, are you interested in him for these upcoming two starts? Because he's pitched very well of late.
Yes, I streamed him. If you probably don't remember, but I streamed him last week in one of my main events. I played him for the two starts. Went very well. And here it is, funny seeing this in real time, but when I was doing lineups today, he was scheduled to face the Blue Jays, Peterson. Now he gets the Royals. Not as good. I think it's a little worse matchup. I think the Blue Jays are just been. It was that weird makeup game in the middle of the week because they have the Dodgers, then they have one game versus the Blue Jays, the Cubs, and then they face the Royals. And that Blue Jays game would have been so nice for Peterson, but he's pitching so well lately. Seeing him with the two stars, I guess, kind of makes sense. And the Cubs made so many moves today; they rebuilt their entire rotation. Peterson's definitely gotten lucky because the swing strike rate's like 8.6%, but he's not really walking a lot of guys, and that's helping a lot. His BABIP is 176 against him in the last 3 weeks with a high left on base. So definitely a matchup play going forward with Peterson as long as he's in the rotation. And, yeah, so they have Boyd, Assad, Amaniga, Gossman, Ray. Oh, God. So they have seven different starters this week, the Cubs. Yeah.
The weird part is they're keeping Colin Ray in. I think they might keep David Peterson over Colin Ray. So.
You'd think so.
Like week three, when I said, like, because he pitches this week, he pitches next week. When Edward Cabrera comes back, they're keeping Ray in the rotation. I think you might keep David Peterson in. So I wouldn't, I guess what I'm saying for the listeners is, yes, use him the next 2 weeks if you want. I wouldn't give up on him just yet. I think a lot of things can still unfold there.
There's also a chance, too, when it comes to Fab Sunday, there's word that Peterson's either out or someone else is out, too. So I hope they make an announcement by then because. Like I said, I'm starting him for this week, Peterson, and then really up in the air going forward. And it's not fully skilled. It's not really backed by his skills, but there's some good things like no walks. And he's limiting hard contact, which I don't know how sustainable that's going to be. But for now, I'm just rolling with Peterson where I have him, and hopefully it pays off. So he's somebody you got to keep your eye on and see what happens with the rotation.
For sure. Jesus Lazardo, you're pitching. Peyton Tolley, you're pitching. Matthew Boyd, pretty sure you're pitching. Shota. Christopher Sanchez, so on and so forth. Let's get to Sean Manaea because we actually had people in the Discord having discourse over him today. He had a two-step this week. People were kind of wondering what to do with Manaea since they also were making trades and doing this, that, and the other. I think it actually gave him more leeway to playing time. But Manaea gets at Cleveland this week, at Pittsburgh this week for the two-step we discussed. That's an 81 WRC plus for Cleveland, 97.5 for Pittsburgh, who is just a good offense, period. And then next week, he gets the Washington Nationals, who have a 118 WRC plus, which is not great. And then he gets at the White Sox, which is a 65.2, but they made a lot of trades to set up a platoon situation there. So that could change by that matchup as well. So we look at a guy like Sean Manaea, Ben. I guess my question for you is, we see this, he's like the 15th lefty on the board with an average of 90.4, which is pretty good, but he's got some real tricky matchups there. So how confident are you in Sean Manaea going forward?
I don't have him anywhere this year, finally. I'm not too confident. Just looking at his year-to-date numbers, not the best. 4.42 ERA, 1.34 whip. Not a lot of strikeouts the last two outings. Granted, it's been the Dodgers and the Braves, so not the easiest matchups. But even versus the Phillies, he had 7 strikeouts, but he got roughed up there. So, yeah, he hasn't really been that good the last couple of starts. Only two wins since June for Manaea, so that's not helping a lot. His underlying numbers are the swing strike's 11.4%, which is okay, but the K is only 19.4% this last 3 weeks. He has the XERA is 5.49, so that's not a good sign. High Sierra and XFIP, I think, because of the low Ks and relatively high walks. His K minus walk Manaea is 11.1%. Yeah, and then if you weren't able to start him this week for the two step, which you probably would, I would definitely do that in a 15 teamer. He gets the Nationals next week. They only really lost Luis Garcia Jr., who wouldn't have been a big issue for Manaea as a fellow lefty. Garcia may have even sat, and then he gets the White Sox after that. So I think you kind of look for matchups with the Nationals star for Manaea, and then he's definitely safe now in the rotation because the Mets traded like their entire staff. I need to see who they have left for roster resource. It's kind of interesting to see. But, I think you – If Manaea is your best starter next week, maybe you have some issues, but in terms of your best seven or however many you have to start, I would just be wary of that national start and then probably definitely put him back in for the, I think it was the Giants, no, the White Sox in week 22.
Yep. Yeah. All right. The last lefty I'm here to highlight, unless you have anyone else you want to hit on, is I want to mention Patrick Sandoval. Once again, I've been talking about him a lot and I get a lot of pushback and I get it. But five innings in his last starts, his fourth start since coming back from TJ, up to 92 pitches, which is really nice. And he's got a two-step this week versus the White Sox, versus the A's, which is pretty nice. Talk about that 65 WRC plus by the White Sox, 77 by the A's. And then the next few weeks are a little different, though. He next week he's got Pittsburgh. Talk about how tricky that can be. The following week he gets Arizona, who's been very good versus lefties. So why I wanted to point this out is when we look at the sheet, it's very, very useful. But it's also you got to like break it down because it says an average of 92 WRC plus. That's weighted heavily by this week's two-step. The next 2 weeks are a lot trickier for Patrick Sandoval. So where would you sit on him, who should be fully stretched out, but matchups could be tricky?
He definitely would have been an add for me, or someone I would have wanted to add in the right spot for the two-step this week. I think I said when we discussed him as an add last week or the week before, I'm not a big – he's also a returning Tommy John guy, and hasn't been really that horrible, though, if you look at his underlying metrics. The last 3 weeks may have been his entire season. 14.9% K-minus walk for Sandoval, which is passable. High BABIP again, so he's got unlucky there, but he has got lucky with the left on base being 86.5%. The swing strikes 11.5, CRX FIP are about 4, but then the XERA is 4.66. Not throwing a lot of balls, which is kind of rare for Sandoval. You'd think that'd be an issue, especially coming back from Tommy John. But yeah, if he does well, if he survives this two-start week, I would be more likely to play him versus the Pirates. And then a couple weeks out, the Diamondbacks could cool off, but they are like a good team now. And it's surprising they're so high. They have such a good WRC plus versus lefties. What's their lineup look like?
They mash them. Like Marte crushes lefty. Like there's a bunch of guys in their lineup that hit lefties very well.
Yeah. Wow. They actually have new. It's funny seeing Nootbaar there now.
They just traded for today. Yeah.
Yeah. They have Tawa, Waldschmidt. Yeah. The Diamondbacks are sneaky. So maybe you sit Sandoval. He's definitely a streamer. Like he's definitely not someone you're going to keep rolling out there, but I like how you pointed out how good it is this week, the matchups. And I think you could even argue that kind of like I said with Manaea, if you have limited options next week, you could consider Sandoval, assuming that they get destroyed by the White Sox and the A's this week.
Agreed. All right, let's go to the righty side of things here. And let's pick something apart real quick. 6 2/3 shutout innings of 7 Ks was great for Will Warren. It's been a roller coaster is the best way I can mention it. Will Warren tops the right-handed list here. He's got three starts upcoming here with an average of 79 WRC plus from his opponents. This week, Will Warren gets the St. Louis Cardinals that versus righties have a 59 WRC plus. Next week, he gets the Seattle Mariners who have a 90 WRC plus. And then the following week, he gets the Baltimore Orioles who have an 86 WRC plus. Are we buying this, Ben?
Oh, man. Because I said him last week, Bubba.
I dropped him everywhere before last week, so it's fine.
Yeah, it was a DC, so I didn't have that luxury of dropping Will Warren, but I put him back in this week, that's for sure. Yeah, it's the Cardinals, and is it just the one start?
Just one start each week. There's no two steps coming up.
Yeah. He's very fringy. I pulled up his underlying numbers. The worst swing strike rate of anyone we talked about last 3 weeks, 7.7% for Warren. It's so funny. He has a 30% K rate. This is what he does all the time. He'll have like a really low swing strike rate, but his K numbers just kind of inflate somehow. He's been unlucky with the BABIP and the left on base. The BABIP's been 360. Left on base has been just below 57%. So both unlucky. K minus walks 25%. But then you look at his harder hit and his exit velocity against. Exit velocity against for Warren is 92.9 miles per hour. Hard hit 61.5. That's horrible. But despite that, the XERA is 3.95. So that tells me a lot of ground balls. It's the only explanation for that. And then the Z contact, as I mentioned it now, because it's so bad, 97%. So 97% of the time, if it's in the zone and they're swinging, they're making contact, which is not sustainable. So he could be was Pollock say cherry bombs. I don't know what the definitions are, but I can see Warren exploding in your face if you play him, which I did in that DC just because I have limited options. But I would say buyer beware.
Yes, that's very, very well said. Let's go to the next one here. Tyler Phillips of the Miami Marlins. This gets me all excited too because I've been saying stream him in a 15, stream him, and I get a lot of blowback. But Tyler Wells, it's four straight starts to 200 runs or less, five straight. He had a zero in there as well. But like seven of his last eight starts, 200 runs or less. Strikeouts are the biggest bugaboo for me with Tyler Phillips. So I'll fully admit that that's kind of a deterrent at times. He just doesn't strike guys out. But he goes about five innings each start. This week against the Angels, which we love. Next week, Tyler Phillips gets the Pirates. Little sketch. Then at Philadelphia. but Philly's been ice cold at 77 WRC plus versus righties. Angels have a 74, like real close to each other. It's a fringy 15 team play. I fully get it, Ben. But when you see a schedule like this, what's your thoughts when it comes to Tyler Phillips and streaming?
I think he's definitely getting lucky. Last 3 weeks, 11.9% K minus walk, but the CR and the xFIP are like 4.3, so not horrible. The xUrea is only 407. So in a 15, that's not going to kill you. The swing strike's been 11%, so I would say that Phillips has gotten unlucky with the strikeouts. He should be closer to 21, 22 at least in terms of his K rate instead of being 17%. So if that regresses up, he could be a little more stable with the results. At least he doesn't walk a lot of guys, but then looking at the matchups, like you mentioned, definitely a start versus the Angels this week. I have him in a 15-teamer. I think he's on my New Jersey main. Phillips, he's definitely a bench streamer in that league, and definitely someone I'd be willing to cut if I needed to keep somebody else and add someone who would have a better matchup than other guys on my team. So I doubt the Phillies will be this enticing of a matchup in a couple weeks. The Pirates, they're sneaky good. They've just been slightly below average. I would like to do better than Phillips versus that matchup. But as a streamer this week versus the Angels, I can probably sign off on that.
For sure. Your boy Ryan Feltner's right there. I'll give you that. You want anything else you want to mention about him? But he's the fourth ranked right-handed pitcher in upcoming matchups.
Let's check the skills real quick.
Because yeah, he gets the Dodgers at home over this 40. So this is not an order. Dodgers and at Arizona, same setup as Freeland, but still, it's St. Louis is the matchup you want. And that's this week.
Yeah, and then that's why I started him, because he was in St. Louis. And looking at Feltner's skills, pretty bad. 10.8% swing strike rate. Sierra and xFIP are above 5. The xERA is 8.05 the last 3 weeks. Oh my god, he's so bad. K minus walk is 6%. Also, he always gets unlucky with the K rate, Feltner. I think it's got to be because of Coors, because his K rate's only 15%, whereas his swing strike's 11%. So it shouldn't be that close to each other. Just stream this week and that's it.
Yep. That,
if yep. that.
All right, interesting one here. The Rays have a good upcoming schedule. New Tampa Bay Ray, Freddie Peralta checks the box here. Average of 83.6 WRC plus in his next four matchups, but these are some tricky matchups. He gets at Coors on Tuesday. That's a 74 WRC plus, but it's at Coors. Next week, it's at Sacramento, at Baltimore, both at 86.5 and 87, so good matchups. And then at home versus Baltimore, so it's two Baltimore matchups back-to-back. Like, at Coors, at Sacramento, for a guy that's been struggling a ton, are you trusting this at all? Like, I have him benched right now.
Yeah, I'm pulling up my lineups right now. I have Peralta on the bench in my listener league. I have him on the bench in one DC and starting in the other DC. So even versus the Rockies, I didn't want to risk that. So and then he's got the Sacramento start, part of the two-step. If he somehow does really well versus the Rockies, Peralta, maybe you consider the two-step if you need volume and strikeouts, but good chance he's a sit next week as well. And then at least we get to see how he does versus the Orioles, because he faces them again in week 22. But this is this one's thing. So I had Peralta on a handful of teams. Like I just mentioned, three spots, and just our boy didn't really come through for us this year, Bubba.
No, he did not. Very, very frustrating. But I'm already getting ready to see all the tweets about how the Rays fixed him. You can see it coming a mile away.
Yes.
A couple more here. Clay Holmes, he returns from the IL. We talked about that recently, but he's got a good set of matchups. He gets Kansas City this weekend, which is surprisingly the best WRC plus in the bunch. And then he gets it's at KC. At KC's week, home versus St. Louis, at Seattle. So nice set of matchups for Clay Holmes if you were interested in picking him up coming off the IL bin.
Yeah, you could definitely do worse. This is hard to tell how he's going to be off the IL, Holmes. And I think it was a leg injury. We said he broke his leg on a foul on a comebacker. So at least it's not arm-related for Holmes. But I remember when he was added in the main event a week or two ago, I was just kind of downplaying the strikeouts. And it could get messy the Royals are kind of depleted lineup-wise. So I don't think – I wouldn't be scared against – if you're not like a daily league and he's confirmed the pitch on the 20 on the 9th this week, Holmes, I would – consider it. I don't know if I'd want to just for start back, but yeah, versus the Cardinals are a good matchup, and here they are roughing up Schuttler as we're recording. And then the Mariners kind of got, I forget who they traded for some hitter, but Yeah, it could end up being
Taylor Ward,
yes, who has limited power this year, and I doubt that's going to help going to Safeco or whatever it's called now. So, yeah, Holmes is a little tricky. He definitely worthy of adding and seeing what happens, but I don't know if I'd play him right away.
A couple more here, like the Cubs are prominently featured on here. The Reds are prominently featured. The Rays are on here a ton. If you have any of those pitchers, really good matchups this week. The next 3 weeks there's actually better righty matchups than left. We talked about it before, but there's only a handful of 80s at six, like 50 to 80s on the lefty side. A lot more on the righties, but again, it's also volume. We talked about it, but Kyle Leahy, just wanted to point this one out. If you're still on that train, he's been really, really good. It's upcoming schedule for Leahy. It's at the Yankees, which you want to pick on the Yankees all you can, versus Philadelphia, who we mentioned struggling, and at Cincy, at Philly. So nice upcoming week for Kyle Leahy. Not sure if you have anything to add on him.
Swing strike rate's kind of low, but the skills are some of the better ones we've seen tonight. Been lucky with the left on base being 100% the last few weeks. That's kind of insane. So maybe every homer it's a solo homer every time. I don't know how you get 100% left on base over a 3 example, but that's what the numbers say. So and he's not walking anybody at Leahy, so that's really helping him. So I think he's someone I'd be willing to, you kind of have to already decide on the Yankee start, but then the Phillies, he gets them twice. They're kind of scary. Then he's in Cincinnati. I feel like he's a 15 team draft and hold type play. I don't know how much I'd want to play him in a fab format right now.
Yeah, I've been streaming him in 15s while he's pitching well, but he's also not a must by any means. I want to hit up, we mentioned Andrew Painter earlier. I just want to highlight it. We talked about the schedule, and it points out here, like, he's got Washington this week, like a 131 WRC plus, but then after Washington, it's a two-step next week at St. Louis, at Minnesota. St. Louis has a 59 WRC plus, Minnesota 94, and then the following week is another St. Louis start. So really good run there for Andrew Painter. Any other pitchers you want to discuss, Ben, as we go to? Yeah, Randy Dobnak has a great setup for you, Ryan, if you're listening. Just want to throw that out there. But anybody else on these lists?
No, a lot of the names are pretty well rostered. Yeah, yeah. The Dobnak one's funny. We've got Lorenz in there, another Rocky.
Yeah, not doing that. Nope, not doing
it. Ty Madden could be interesting. He gets one start per RotoWire right now. I don't know if he would stick around or not. Let's see what their lineup looks
with,
like.
Yeah, with Mize and Scooble out of town, that could actually be a little nifty one there for Detroit. They got Madden at Seattle this week. And then, they're expecting Jackson Joe back next week, but they still have an incomplete starting rotation. So, yeah, that's up for grabs.
Yes, look at Ty Madden. Without Joe, with a 3-man rotation of Valdez, Montero, and Troy Melton. So the Tigers are in rough shape. Not as bad as the Mets. So I think the Mets have 4 bullpen arms on roster resource right now, so that's always fun.
They're a disaster. And they have a higher payroll than the Dodgers, so good times.
That's so funny. Wesneski's on here, so that's good to see if you added him. Yeah, no one really would know what I would say.
All right, a couple questions real quick before we head out of here. In the YouTube chat here, PJ says, one deadline-related question, but also next week's Fab-related. Is Josh Baez time with Nupar traded? I think it should be, but we've been saying that for a while. So let's see what the Cardinals want to do. What are your thoughts on? I know some of you have already speculated on Baez.
It makes sense because I don't know what he plays in the outfield, but they have Brian Torres and Nathan Church in center left on roster resource. So I think there's a good chance that Baez could get called up to replace one of them.
All right. In the Discord, Timothy has a question for you. I'm trying to decipher this show and the other show's questions, but I got one for you. Timothy says, okay, here's my rest of season question. Should you care to answer it? I always love how he prefaces things. How many steals behind is too many steals? Can you make up 2 steals a week, 3 steals a week? What about saves? If you can gain 5 spots by out saving your opponent by 20, do you go for it? So I guess it's in general, like counting stats. Like, how many is too many, and what do you expect to make up a week? Because steals and saves are kind of in a similar boat.
That's a tough question. The thing is, like, you have to, so your opponents are going to get, in theory, they're going to be getting the same stats each week. You just have to outpace them. If you're trying to catch up, so you really have to commit. You almost have to, like, if it comes to steals, you have to get really lopsided. Let me try to figure this out.
Like the other part, like you said, if you can gain 5 spots by out saving your opponents by 20, do you go for it? I'd say five spots is pretty something to think about. Yeah,
but 20 is a lot of saves. That's
yes.
That's four.
That's what you had to start like four closers a week type stuff.
Yeah, 20 over 8 weeks. That's two. So you have to outpace by 20. So you have to already get to what like the average team's getting per week, which is probably like 2.5. If I would have to guess.
Yeah.
So what was the original? Oh, it was like he's talking about steals. So for my teams. Per full week, my three main events are averaging 6.5 steals, 6.1 steals, and 6 on the nose steals. They're like two of them are like the lower ones are kind of mediocre in terms of overall points. I think they're in like the 600s, which is above average. The 6.5 one has 118 steals total. You definitely want to be around. You want double-digit steals, I think, if you're trying to catch up. And that one team only has 10 twice. The other team has 10 and 11. And then this other main three only has double digits once. That's why it's been a big issue for me is trying to catch up in steals. But it's just but the problem with that is that you have to almost have the perfect player because if you have rabbits on your team, you're probably going to then fall behind in homers and RBIs. Most likely, because they probably don't give you the average homer totals that you would need for those roster spots per week to at least maintain your current standing. So it's tricky. That's why I think it's probably better to start looking at your standings like in that way, maybe in June, and not like fully commit, but just look at and try to target guys who could help get you back up in the standings, and then. Where you're almost playing like whack-a-mole, but maybe not going too far in one direction. You're just kind of trying to balance it out and maintain some more balance going forward. So with 8 weeks to go, it's kind of late, especially only 7 fab periods left. Cause like in a week I'm averaging 6 steals across my teams and they're relatively competitive in steals. It's not that they're running away with the league titles, but they're in the middle, which is kind of where you want to be. I do at least with steals. So the number is going to be tough to hit if you're trying to make up a lot of ground, I think.
There you have it. Ben has spoken. The kid has spoken. All right. Any final thoughts, Ben, as we wrap up the week? You mentioned 7 more fab periods to go.
I just hope you and Ryan cover every move in detail tonight so I can get caught up.
We're going to cover most of them. Can't tell you it's going to be every one of them. And if you want prospects, we probably won't talk about them tonight. We'll talk. I might have something lined up later in the week for that. But we'll hit on all the other goodies. Hopefully get some more news before the show to help us break down what's coming up in the world of the trade deadline. But until next time, make sure you follow Ben on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. I am at BDNTrick. This was your Week 20 Fab Recap on Bench with Bubba, episode 871. Catch you all next time.